The book of Omni. In the beginning of this book, which is only one chapter long, learn of Omni, who was then given the records. He was the son of Jerem. Now, he had the records for 50 years. Again, we have to watch that the time is moving by very, very quickly in these short passages. We'll notice as we read them that nonetheless, the same thing continues to repeat itself over and over again. Not only that will they continue to mention that they continue to have wars with the Lamanites, but we'll see that the same sort of work for the righteous go on also. Well, in the beginning, Omni says that he's a wicked man, and it's okay that we take compassion. I notice how I want to relate to Omni. Well, it's all right if we take compassion that he was diligent in keeping the records. But when we start to say to relate to him and say, oh, gee, yes, I'm a lot like Omni. See, we're kind of glorying in the idea that, yes, it's okay. You know, Omni was actually a good man, and it's okay to be like Omni. And that's really not the truth. What we're doing is we're exactly relating that, just like he said, that we have sins that we need to repent of, but we've made a decision not to repent of them. And then we act like, well, that's okay, that we're still good and we would have still passed on the record like Omni. And this is, again, this idea of being worthy, and that we can still have sins that we don't repent of. And for all eternity, we're going to continue to repent and to have eternal progress and to grow. And the key thing there that is evil and cause of problem is when we determine that we do not want to repent anymore, or we have that sin that the sin or weakness the Lord wants us to work on, and we choose another to repent on, because the Lord knows which ones are being the big block for our progress. And we have to, so again, the thing there is making that decision to keep repenting. And once you stop, then you've stopped your eternal progression. And then he passes the record on to his son, Amaron, who keeps it for 40 years. Now, see, 10 times going by, but it goes on to say that, tell us that that nonetheless, the same work was being done among the people that always been done. And it says that the Lord destroyed the wicked Nephites in order to preserve the Nephites longer. And again, how did he destroy? He said by judgments, which judgments is natural disasters and plagues and war and things like that. But, you know, it's all the different things. But we must remember that, that before the Lord came the first time, that he caused all these natural disasters to come in and wipe all the wicked out. Well, we can expect that these same things happen during their time, and we can expect that to happen during our time for the righteous' sake. But nonetheless, he continues that this is always his way to clear the wicked out from amongst the righteous, or as we'll see a little bit later, to take the righteous out from amongst the wicked. The statement that he keeps making is, inasmuch as ye will not keep my commandments, ye shall not prosper in the land. Well, the reverse of that is obviously, inasmuch as you keep my commandments, ye will prosper in the land. Both ways, and he says it over and over and over again. And again, we say, well, we're prospering, and so therefore, obviously, we must be doing well. And again, I say to you, would we think the people of Alma the Elder, when they were in captivity, or were the people of Limni, when they were giving 50% of everything they had to the tribute, did they consider themselves prospering, even though when they followed the Lord, he made their burdens lighter and he gave them extra? Did they still consider that to prosper, to have to give up 50% of what they had, and that in actuality, like the people of Limhi, everything was owned by the Lamanites, so they were their land was really not theirs. It was considered the land of the Lamanites, and they just got to use it, and therefore they had to pay a tribute. Where are we today? None of us own our land. We're mortgaged up to our ears, and we have to pay 50% of everything we have in various forms of taxes and so forth in order to live here. And the government says we really don't own the land. We just use it, and we have to pay them a rent or a tax in order for the right to have it and use it. Well, what kind of more bondage you want? But nonetheless, people want to run around and say that we're prospering. No, we're not prospering, and these burdens are coming on us, and they will continue to increase and increase and increase because we are not following the Lord, and we're not setting up our government, our economy, and our church like the Lord has told us to do. So then Amram gave the records unto his brother Chemish, and Chemish just verifies that, yes, it was Amram that wrote on the, in these records, and that the records were being passed on. The important thing here is, again, make it clear that these records are real. These are people writing these things, and that and that we're to know that they're really their words, so that we can take them literal and to heart, that this is how people and we and the Lord's people are supposed to live. So then the record was passed on to Abinadab, and then on to Amalekai. And Amalekai then begins to talk a little bit more about going on in his time, and he talks about the first King Mosiah. Often we forget that there are two King Mosiahs, and the one that really started the righteous times, or prepared for the real righteous times, was the first King Mosiah. And he was told to flee out of out from amongst the wicked people. And so we see that the righteous followers of Christ were again told to flee and go to a new land, just like the first followers, the true followers of Christ that went with Nephi, and just like Lehi left. And over again, we see that that there are two things the Lord does. He tells his righteous followers to flee, or he purges the wicked out from amongst them. So purging and separating are the ways of the Lord, and he repeats this over and over and over again in the history. He has never told men, no, I want you to stay amongst the wicked and try and convert them. They have their own land, they stay righteous, and then they might send missionaries unto the wicked and try and convert them. But he does not say, go live amongst those wicked ones. In fact, as we again see in the story of the people who ended up going back, by the way, at the end of the Words of Mormon, we'll see that people go back to want to live in the land of Nephi, which we know did become the people of Limhi. They began to have problems, and ended up in bondage. The point is, the Lord has never told us to go out and live amongst the wicked. Now, I don't know how many times we have to say that, but all of a sudden, here's men again, just like the people during the Book of Mormon. They start thinking they can get away with doing it, and they want to possess the old land that they had, and they start mingling again with the wicked, and it always causes destruction and captivity. And notice also that with King Mosiah, he goes out into the wilderness. How long was he in the wilderness? It doesn't tell us how long he was in the wilderness, but this covers his whole lifetime. He's probably in the wilderness just like the Israelites or the family of Lehi. They were in the wilderness for some time, because it says here that they had the same things happening to them as were happening with Nephi and Lehi. So finally, though, they go through the wilderness, and they end up in a land called Zarahemla. And it's headed by a man named Zarahemla. And they're populated by another group who after Lehi had left Jerusalem. And they had had a similar story. They had also had a similar story to Lehi. But they were there, and they could verify that, yes, that Jerusalem had been destroyed, and the people were being taken captive into Babylon. So we have some actual eyewitness that the prophecies concerning the Jews in Jerusalem had been fulfilled. But these people had fallen into complete apostasy. Not only that, they had changed their entire language. Well, what was the reason for this? The reason was, is they did not have any records. And so we see the importance of having these records. But notice it took several hundred years for this to happen. And this wasn't exactly overnight, but it shows when not having these records, what we can lose. This is also kind of a foresight of why the Nephites are then completely destroyed and not the Lamanites, because the Nephites have the record, and the Lamanites do not. And so they know better. Well, we could say that today. We have the records. We have the Book of Mormon, but what do we think of it? We set it for naught, and we don't believe it can really be used in our daily lives. And we say that this is just a history for other people, but does not apply to us. So we can expect the same judgments, the same separation, the same everything that has went on in the amongst the wicked people of the Book of Mormon, because we have to the people in the Book of Mormon, because we have rejected the words that they gave to us. Well, then King Mosiah finds a rock, and on the rock is engraved some things, and he's able to interpret them. And we notice now that the first King Mosiah was a great prophet also, because he was also a seer, and he was able to interpret these things. And we learn of Coriantumr, and who was the last of the Jaredites. We learn a little bit about the Jaredites. And then they actually find Coriantumr. And Coriantumr, therefore, we find, this is in reverse order, as we read the end of the Book of Mormon, we find that the prophecy that Ether gave him, that he would see the new people in the land, did come to pass, and see the new people who would inhabit America, and then he dwells with them for 9 months, and then he dies. And so that was just to show that he saw the that prophecy did come true. And then King Benjamin takes over, and he becomes the new king, and he's the son of King Mosiah. And the wars continue. At that time, King Benjamin then gets the records, because Malachi did not have any children, and so there he delivers the records up to King Benjamin, and he now has them. And in this, he gives us a definition of good men, and what a good men are like. And it says that they come unto God, the Holy One of Israel, and believe in prophesying. We don't believe in prophesying today, and we don't believe that the Book of Mormon's a prophecy. We don't believe that the prophecies of Ezra Taft Benson. And it says, believe, and in Revelation, we believe that there's no more revelation to be made of the Book of Mormon. It's just a dull book that doesn't have a lot in it that we could read, that we should read a little bit, and as work that we have to do in order to be worthy. But we don't believe that it really reveals things to us. And then they should believe in the ministering of angels. For those who have not been ministered to by angels, the ministering of angels is best described that you, in your head, you can begin to ask questions. The answers are immediately brought into your head. And as this gets stronger, it will be as clear as having a conversation with another man, that you can ask the question and you immediately are given the answer, and you can go into a extensive dialogue in this manner. It says also that they would believe in the gift of speaking of tongues and interpretation of tongues. And we certainly haven't had any of that. In some degree, the interpretation of tongues has to do with being a seer. And we've lost all of this in our last days, all except for there is some degree of help given to the missionaries when they go out to spread the Book of Mormon and learning the languages of other countries. So we do have some degree of that. But nonetheless, we have lost the general belief in that. Now in verse 26, it says that we are to come unto Christ, who is the Holy One of Israel. Notice up to the top it said, come unto God, the Holy One of Israel. We learn from this that our God is Jesus Christ, and the one that is running our, that is executing the plan of salvation for us, for this earth, is Christ, and He is our God. He is our all in this life, and He is our conduit, He is our only way to heaven and back to live with our eternal Father. Then it explains how to come unto Him. It says, come unto Him and offer your whole soul as an offering unto Him. Offer your whole soul, meaning your whole spirit, your whole feeling. Everything is directed towards Christ, and that you'll do anything He asks. You want to follow Him. You turn yourself over to Him. You offer your soul and say, here, you mold my soul. You mold my character. You tell me what to do, and I will do it. And that is what it means to come unto Christ. And so we now have an explanation of that here. Again, it's turning your soul and offering your entire spirit up to Christ. Again today, no one takes it literal that we really come unto Christ. Well, in the end of this chapter, it then mentions some who go back to the land of Nephi because they want to possess that land, and again, we'll see what happens to them and later on.